These new farming economies spread like wildfire after 9000 BC. This was a highly effective way of living. It had the consequence of poorer diets, shorter life expectancy, more medical problems because people were crowded into villages with limited sanitation. But it was successful. Within 2,000 years, by 7,000 BC, there was considerable variation in farming culture throughout southwestern Asia, not only in the Levantine corridor where so much began, but also in the Zagros highlands of Iran, in parts of Mesopotamia, and in Turkey. Between 10,000 and about 6,000 BC, agriculture developed and flourished in all these areas, as did the herding of sheep and goats. But it should be recognized that in these early millennia, people still relied heavily on wild plant foods and on game. Why? Because their crops were not that productive. But after 6,000 BC, more productive cereal grains came into use, and the domestication of two more animals, cattle and pigs, added to a fully agricultural and stock-raising economy that was to persist in historical times in many areas in much more elaborate forms. By 6000 BC, you had basically a fairly multifaceted subsistence economy over much of eastern Mediterranean, and it was about to spread into Europe. This period was one of the most periods of the most profound social change in human society. The biggest change was the first appearance of some social ranking. Now, this social ranking, even in small villages, must have been closely connected with the need to resolve problems, to regulate the distribution of food, and particularly to deal with such issues as the inheritance of land. The popular catchword for these people, a headman or a chief. But one of the most powerful things in these societies, almost certainly, were kin groups. Groups who were descended from a common ancestor. And as social ranking in society began to be a factor, some of these kin groups or lineages became more important than others, wealthier than others, maybe were perceived to have superior spiritual powers. And it is from this kin leadership, which was reflected in the communal ownership of land and the passing of land from one generation to the other, that the first kin leaders, or chiefs, appeared. It's a very interesting issue, this whole thing. We'll get back to it again later in the course. But becoming a leader involves two things. One, it involves personal qualities, charisma. You can become a charismatic figure, an expert trader, a devout priest, whatever you wish. But then one day, having attracted all these followers, you die. And your following evaporates rapidly. It's rather like a rock star or a musician who dies. His following changes or evaporates. That's very different. A sort of personal aggrandizer, a big man, as the literature often has called him, from somebody who inherits their office, a hereditary chief who passes the office to his son because he's in the same kin group and he is the natural successor because he's in the same lineage. It may have to be approved by the community, but hereditary office holding came in quite early. We don't know when, but I suspect it may have been in some areas as early as 6000 BC. Why do I think this? Because at Jericho, at Ein Gezel, and other sites, ancestors were revered and carefully preserved. There is, of course, as we saw here, the Ein Gezel example. But the real issue here was continuity, leadership, and the relationship with the land. And legitimacy for leaders came from their links to revered ancestors, their membership in prestigious lineages. And this may have been the way that leadership came. But ultimately, the most successful were charismatic people, people with strong personalities, who had the right credentials, but also had great ability, like many of the pharaohs in Egypt, late times, or some of the Maya lords, and so on. Here, you see the first signs of chieftaincy.